down there, the boss man says. Cause nobody would think twice about hearing a scream coming out of the ghost house. Delivers them, I does. Yep. At night, when it's all quiet, like. The boss man gives them to me in a jar. Asks where they come from. I doesn't. Mustn't know. No questions, the boss man says. Cause folk who be asking questions is the same as folk who be ended up in the ghost house. Not me, no questions. Came after closing time once, the boss man, with one of his jars he did. Shining, it was. Glowing like a prize. What's in it? I says. Couldn't stop looking at it. Enchanting it was. Dazzling. Long I gazed into it. Saw things. Wonders too special to speak of. A soul, the boss man says. Didn't understand him. A soul? A living soul taken from some poor sod? That's exactly what it was. That's what the boss man told me it was. That's what he does. He collects souls. Takes them from passers-by and stores them in his jars. Does it for someone he calls the Observer. My boss man has his own boss man. I doesn't ask no more, mustn't. Why should I be helping you? I asks him. Here, the boss man says. Unscrews the jar. Lifts the lid just a bit. Sniff it, he says. I does. The jar screams. The boss man screws the lid back on. I falls down to the grass. It'd be like taking a drug, don't it? The boss man says. I almost can't hear him. Lost I am in a haze of bliss. When I comes to, I asks him why the jar screamed. The souls don't like it, he says. The souls are still living? I asks. For now, the boss man says. Then I starts making my way towards him, demanding another sniff of the jar. Just one, just a little one, be generous! The boss man keeps me at bay, doesn't let me close. Perhaps we can come to an arrangement, the boss man says. You work at this fun fair? I does, I tells him. Cleans things, the booths, the games, the rides. You have access to the rides? He asks. I tells him I does. He stands for a bit, thinking. Asks about the ghost house. Asks if there's usually screaming. Screaming, I says. Wailing, howling. Scariest ghost house in the land, they says. This makes the boss man happy. Screws the lid on tight. Hands it to me. Keep them there, he says. I'll bring more. But you must give me back the ones I ask for. And you can have a little sniff once each day. As a reward, like. But only one, mind. Overjoyed I was. Euphoric. Now it's how I spend me days. Cleaning, sneaking, sniffing, delivering. Stealing an extra sniff. Sometimes I'm spotted in the ghost house by some of the customers. They just think I'm part of it. The ghost house. They're right too. I'm part of the ghost house. And it's part of me.
Welcome to the Finding North podcast Halloween special. I'm Chris Morris. This week, I'm pleased to present a story which was awarded an honourable mention in the Globe Soup 2022 short story contest, The Last Werewolf in Erlingdale. Please enjoy.
Marley might have considered ordering the steak from the Erlingdale eating house had it not been for the fact that he'd been hunting a werewolf all evening, and the thought of consuming meat had become something akin to the thought of stealing his neighbour's milk and then complaining that it was rotten.
"Wallaby then, chief?" Officer Nash asked him. "Will I just get you something small, like?"
He'd just thrown on his raincoat, and peering out into the darkness, looked as though he was trying to calculate the driest path towards the restaurant from the police station.
"See what soup they have," Marley said. "But if it be that dreadful squashed squatchet soup, you can tell them I'd rather starve. Who in their right blasted minds wants live tentacles wriggling around in their stomach? Ugh!"
"What about just bringing back some bread?" Nash asked.
"Can't go wrong with a good piece of cornbread."
"Aye, you can," Officer Nixon exclaimed.
He was in the middle of squeezing his large feet into a pair of green Wellington boots that were clearly too small for him.
"Last time me and my wife was at that damn restaurant, so we asked for cornbread. In the middle of tearing it up, a snake jumped out of it and sunk its fangs into my wrist. Look, see the marks?" "I asked the waiter what in the bloody hell a snake was doing in the bread.
The chef thinks cornbread is made with a live corn snake in it," he says.
"What did you do with the snake?"
Nash asked his comrade.
"The only bloomin' thing I could," Nixon returned. "I chopped its raw head off with my steak knife. Blood everywhere. Thing was, it kept on wriggling, like that damn soup they serve. Wriggled all its way across the table and onto some old blind feather plate sitting not too far from us."
Nash screwed his face up in anticipatory disgust.
He didn't eat it, did he?"
"Scoffed it down like it were Mammy's best Sunday roast," Nixon confirmed. "Even asked the waiter if there was more."
"In any case," Nash said, raincoat now fully buttoned, "would you be wanting some cornbread if there's any, chief?" "Aye," Marley nodded. "But see that you have your muskets at the ready, lads. And make sure you're ready for any snakes. I don't want bitten on the hands on a night where me hands should be signing the death warrant of the last werewolf in Erlingdale."
"Aye, chief," Nash and Nixon said together, and they strode off into the rain.
"You can't be killing a man or a woman just for being a werewolf, though, can you?"
Blake, the restaurant manager, asked as he was bagging the food for the police officers.
"Aye, well, that's the thing, isn't it?" Nixon said. "In the old days, you could. Nobody would bat an eyelid if he decided to shoot dead a monster like a werewolf."
Nash elbowed his partner hard in the ribs.
"Oi, watch it, you. You can't be calling werewolves monsters."
All right, Nixon said, clutching at his side.
"Folk, then. But you know what I mean, the policy and all."
"Aye, the policy," Blake said.
"Mind you, it served this town well. Most of the folk at work here are only here because of it."
"Is that really what you'd call serving the town well?"
Nixon inquired. Then turning directly to Blake and lowering his voice a little, he said,
"Who be your head chef these days? What be their ailment?"
Blake turned his head once behind him and, seeing nobody within earshot, replied to the police officer,
"Edward, he's one of them undead types."
"A ghost?"
Nash gasped.
"Don't be such a fool," Nixon said. "There's no such thing as ghosts."
"There is too,"
Nash fired back, raising a pointed index finger in the air and looking as though he was about to divulge some spook story or other about the last time he visited the graveyard.
"For the love of every man and woman and child in Erlingdale," Nixon interrupted, "if I hear your white lady story one more time, so help me, I'll fire me musket through your earlobe."
In an apparent attempt to bring some civility back into the conversation, the manager said,
"Ed's no ghost. He's a zombie." "A zombie, you say?"
Nixon turned back to Blake.
"And I suppose he's got his ways of making working conditions undesirable?"
"Aye," Blake said, once again lowering his voice and leaning closer to the officers.
"We've lost two members of staff to him. Bit them, and then they turned. A few customers, too." "But back in the good old days," Nixon said, "you'd have been able to dismiss him.
But what with the policy now, you're to keep him employed. Treat him nicely.
Erlingdale. One town, many peoples, and all."
"Well, I for one think it's a good thing," Nash said. "It's not anyone's fault should they be turned into a...
"Go on, Nash," Nixon said. "Just say it. A monster, a creature, an undesirable."
a person with unusual... carrots and sticks.
Nixon turns to Blake once more, this time with an apologetic look about him.
He means characteristics. My colleague here ne'er was granted the gift of linguistic aptitude.
Well, in any case,
Nash continued, a tone of annoyance in his voice,
we're officers of the law. We should obey the policy at all times as well, you know, Nixon.
I don't know that, Nixon said. Know it very well, so I do.
'Twould be a treat indeed if someone were to change our chief's mind about listening to that dreadful mayor of ours.
Blake, placing the last of the officers' foods into the paper bags, lowered his voice even more. 'Twould be a real treat if someone were to change his mind. Nash now took the liberty of carrying the paper bags out of the restaurant and back into the rain. When he was fully out of earshot, Nixon smiled at Blake.
Or change the chief, he said.
5 arrests made in search for the last werewolf in Erlingdale. The Erlingdale Times can report that several arrests were made last night by police in the search for the killer of one Jacob Moore, believed to be a werewolf. Moore, 55, was found dead in the early hours of Tuesday morning when his neighbour, Jemima Plaert, 61, had knocked on the door to complain of a horrid stench. It had been tormenting me all night, Jemima recalls. I even tried cooking up a batch of my famous onion muffins in an attempt to mask the smell, but nothing was working. He never answered his door, so I checked the window and there he was, lying as still as a sleeping snail. I ran all the way to the police department. Police soon discovered that Moore had been shot with a silver bullet, prompting the likely conclusion that he was a werewolf. Someone out there knows why Mr. Moore was killed, Chief of Police Marley Edwards told us. And who better to know who the werewolf in town is than the other werewolf? Questioning is believed to be ongoing today at the Erlingdale Police Department. Police would like to appeal to the public for any evidence they may have which would help with their investigation. They would like all residents of Erlingdale to understand that any evidence presented which leads to the incrimination of the werewolf will be rewarded with a week's supply of cornbread from the Erlingdale Eating House. Officer Nash slammed his bald fists onto the wooden table in front of the arrested lady.
Where were you on tonight, oh? Tonight before today, what, that werewolf man was shot dead, eh?
Tonight before today, the lady responded calmly, almost with a smile.
I'm sorry, but that's a little confusing. How could tonight be before today?
Marley placed a firm hand onto Nash's shoulder and indicated for him to take a seat before turning to the lady.
I'm awful sorry, Eliza. Officer Nash here is just a little excited, that's all. First time doing a police interview. Let's restart. I'm Chief Marley. This is Officer Nash and Officer Nixon. We're looking for...
A werewolf, apparently, Eliza interrupted.
Aye, well, what makes you think I'm one?
Looking towards his officers for some support in how to express an answer to this question, Marley saw that both men were now staring at the floor.
What?
Eliza asked irritatedly, watching Marley's gaze shift from the officers back to her.
You must have some reason for suspecting me. Spit it out, what was it?
It be the... Marley started. The...
The arms, Nixon finished for his chief. They're awful hairy.
Eliza glanced down at her arms and then looked back up towards the policeman with disgust.
How dare you? It's not much gentlemanlike to be talking about a woman's hairy arms now, is it? You should all be ashamed of yourselves. Besides, they're hardly the hairiest arms in Erlingdale now, are they?
It's not just the arms,
Marley said, unable to maintain eye contact with the woman. Eliza's jaw dropped. Fury began once more to fill her reddened face.
Why else then, eh? You, Nash, you've been awful quiet since your first outburst. What else makes y'all think I'm a damned werewolf?
Without looking up from the floor, Nash said,
The teeth.
Being that Eliza's mouth was now hanging open as wide as the gap in the farmer's heads last week, who had been killed in an unfortunate accident with a hole, it was easy for Marley to observe the huge, pointed and sharp white fangs within them.
My mother had teeth just like these, Eliza fumed. And her mother before that. You can't be arresting someone on suspicion of being a blasted werewolf just because of their hairy arms and sharp teeth.
And pointy ears,
Nixon said to Marley's side, and Marley observed that his eyes darted once more to his shoes after he'd said it.
Pointy ears?
Eliza was irate.
That's not even a werewolf thing.
Oh, it is, Nash piped up. The famous werewolf of West Yarlington had pointy ears, sure enough, and bad breath. After seeing his last three words, and in an instant show of regret, Nash jolted and placed a hand to his mouth.
Right, enough of this damned silliness, Marley shouted. Whether you've got pointy ears, pointy fingernails, a pointy blasted hat, or breath as bad as the broth from the damned Erlingdale eating house, don't matter. Tell us straight, Eliza. Are you a werewolf?
Eliza looked the chief straight in the eyes.
No. Do you swear by it? Marley asked. Can you look into a mirror and say as much?
Marley now produced a pocket-sized mirror, the kind that many women in town might carry in their handbag, and placed it on the table in front of Eliza. To the side, he caught Nixon watching on with an awestruck look. Eliza sighed and looked into the mirror.
I hereby swear that I am in no shape or form a blasted were... Vampire! Nixon screamed all of a sudden. Chief, she's a vampire! As God is my witness, she has no reflection in your mirror!
Marley and Nash sprung to their feet and walked around to the same side of the table as their colleague. Looking into the mirror, Marley could see no reflection of Eliza within it. He quickly snapped the mirror shut and took a step back from Eliza.
So that's why you asked if you could come in when we were escorting you into the station, Nixon exclaimed. A vampire has to ask permission to come in.
Eliza sighed.
Guilty as charged. Great, Nixon enthused. We might not have caught the werewolf yet, but we got ourselves a vampire. Aye, and she's free to go, Marley said.
Nixon spun on the chief.
What? What do you mean, chief? She's one of the undead. We can't let her roam about town looking for victims. Watch your tongue, Nixon, Marley snapped, and remember the policy. She's as much right to citizenship in this town as you have. Now be off with you, miss.
Eliza stood up, and the three men cowered away from her. With a sly smile, she thanked the officers for their time and left the station. The next suspect, a young fellow by the name of Henry, had been sitting behind the table for some 10 minutes before he spoke his first words, which turned out to be... Expecting the man to be sick, Marley darted up from his seat and took 5 swift steps backwards, only stopping because he had bumped into Officer Nash, who had been on his way back into the room, with the leftover food from the Erlingdale eating house.
Blimey, Chief, what's gotten into you?
I think he might have just been yawning, Nixon said, staring into Henry's glazed eyes.
Henry, can you hear me, lad?
Henry's eyes remained fixed on the far wall of the room. They were glazed, almost completely white. Even when Officer Nixon waved a slow hand in front of his face, the eyes returned no response of any kind.
Why do you think this one might be a werewolf, Chief? Nash asked.
Marley looted his officer as though he'd just asked if he should be washing last week's load of dirty laundry before or after he'd bathed his fetid body in it.
Look at him, man! Look at his eyebrow! Aye, that's eyebrow, singular-like. A proper unibrow, if I ever saw one. Clear sign of a werewolf. That's it, Chief, Officer Nixon said. I think we've got our man. Definite werewolf. Look at him, brain dead he is.
Werewolves aren't brain dead, Nash protested.
Yes, they is, Nixon said.
They're as brain dead as a... What's that thing called?
A squatchet?
Nash asked.
No, you bloomin' fool, not a squatchet. Blimey, why can't I think of it? Chief, what is it I'm thinking about?
Marley peered up at the pair of officers. He had been sitting cradling his head in his hands and listening to their foolish prattle from the corner of the room since taking his seat there after his unfortunate bump with Officer Nash.
I dunno. Go and get the book.
The book?
Nash enthused. Brilliant idea, Chief.
Throwing the bag of leftover food on the table in front of the prisoner, Nash exited the room in such a hurry that he missed Henry immediately lunge forwards and tear into it.
No!
Marley and Nixon shouted together. It was the quickest they had ever seen this man move. His eyes were now widened as he waded through the contents of the bag, throwing to the floor anything he wasn't interested in. Arriving back into the room with a large and heavy hardback, the giant's book of folk with unusual carrots and sticks, Nash observed the scene with some shock.
Nash! Marley screamed. Use that damned book to find out what the blooming hell this man is!
Right, Nash shouted, and began flicking through pages of the book as quickly as he could go.
Pale face, eyes as white as a ghost. Chief, could it be a ghost?
Marley untied a shoe and slipped it off before launching it at the hungry man. As it bounced off his head with a wet smack, Henry groaned a little, but continued his search for food.
Nope, Marley cried. He ain't transparent anyway. Keep looking.
Right, right, Nash returned to the book. He stinks, don't he? Let's see, monsters what stink. Is he a skunk, mayhap?
A bleeding skunk,
Nixon shouted.
He's a man, Nash, look at him.
Well, I don't know,
Nash wailed.
He could be half man, half skunk, like a skunk man or something.
He ain't a bloody superhero, Nash, Marley cried. Keep looking.
Brains! Brains!
Marley spun round at this sudden word from Henry. A vital clue, perhaps?
Did he say brains? Nixon inquired. Nash, look up what sort of creature says brains.
Nash now began flicking through the pages of the book so quickly that Marley was more than a little concerned about a fire starting in the police station. At that moment, Officer Nixon attempted to intervene and stop Henry from relentlessly rifling through the food bag, especially as the cornbread was now in the middle of the table and pulsating threateningly. However, as soon as his arm crossed in front of the hungry man's face, Henry grabbed it and opened his mouth wide.
Oi! Nixon screamed. Get off!
Nixon placed his free hand to Henry's forehead and pushed it away from his arm as hard as he could, but the man's strength was impressive.
Nash! Nixon yelled. Find out what this blooming thing is so we know how to fight it!
Looking up from the book for a moment, Nash said,
So you agree he's not a werewolf now then? Yes, yes! Just find out how to get him off me!
Zombie! Nash said with glee. I think he's a zombie. Says here they can be right vicious.
It was then that Chief Marley decided it was time to whack the man with force atop his head with a baton. The creature let go of Nixon's head and gazed up at the chief with confusion.
All right, sir, Marley said firmly. You're no werewolf, so we've no further questions for you. Now be off before Officer Nixon shoots you in the head and calls it self-defense.
Dropping his head dully to his chest and uttering a sad,
Brains,
Henry stood and exited the police station. By the time of the third interview, Marley had almost had enough. Another man sat behind the table now, and leaving Officers Nash and Nixon to interview him, Marley sat with a pack of cards, shuffling through them lazily and trying to remember an old magic trick he'd once known in his youth.
So let me get this right, the suspect said. You think I, Thomas Mullins, the finest of all the stage actors in Erlingdale, might be one of those... How do you say it? Beast of the night, Nash said. Moon owler, Nixon suggested. Airy fanged monster. Diabolical dog. Woesome wolf. Terrible tyrant. Fearsome frightening furry a
werewolf, yes, Thomas interjected.
Werewolf, aye, Nixon confirmed. And in being so, you would be guilty of murdering the only other werewolf in town with a silver bullet.
Here, Thomas began to laugh, gently at first, and then as loudly and as projected as though he were on stage and wished to show the folk at the back how talented he truly was. When he calmed enough to speak, he said,
And where do you get this foolish idea?
Your neighbour, Nash said, says she's heard howling coming from your house at night, during the full moon.
Howling? Thomas replied, incredulous. Why, there hasn't been any howling coming from my home. What kind of pretentious, primordial, prancing plinth of a pockards has been saying such of me?
Sorry, Nash said. Can you take it back a step? Pretentious?
Oh, never mind, Thomas fumed. I was practicing some alliterative speech. Good methods to enhance my abilities on stage. I practice that at night, not howling.
Officer Nixon now snapped his fingers together and pointed at Thomas with a sudden look of recognition on his face.
Wait a minute. I saw one of your shows. Aye, About a vampire that comes to Erlingdale and gets a job at the hospital taking folks' blood donations. Hilarious it was!
Thomas turns to the officer with a frown. It was a very serious drama.
Oh, Nixon said. Right, well, your singing in the show was very realistic.
Thomas, alongside Officer Nash, raised an eyebrow at this.
What do you mean realistic? Nash questions. Either Tuman sang or he didn't.
Oh, Nixon laughed.
Aye, I see the confusion. What I mean is it was very realistic singing, given the character Thomas was playing. You sang just like what I thought a banshee would sing like. Horrible it was.
Thomas, in an apparent state of rage, stood and threw his chair to the ground.
I was playing a human! And I'll have you know, officer, my producer said she thought it was the most radiant and beautiful singing she'd ever heard.
Aye, Nixon said. I know your producer, Elaine. She's a banshee, ain't she?
And what of it? Thomas cried.
Well, a banshee probably would think that type of singing was... Perhaps in an attempt to quell the quarrel, Officer Nash interrupted.
Wait a minute. Thomas, do you practice your singing late at night? Maybe that's what your neighbour heard.
Thomas, picking up the chair and sitting down now, seems to have regained his composure.
Yes, I do practice my singing at night. Perhaps it's not to everyone's taste, but likely that is what my neighbour heard. Am I free to go? Not just yet, Chief Marley decided to speak up from the corner, still holding his pack of cards in front of him. We still don't have any proof you're not a werewolf. How are we supposed to know you're not the man we're looking for?
Thomas sighed and looked at the chief and his two men almost apologetically.
I suppose I'll have to admit it. Admit it! Nixon cried. Blimey, chief, we found him! The last werewolf in Erlingdale!
I'm not admitting to being a werewolf, you buffoon, Thomas snapped. I'm about to admit that I'm something else entirely. The officers froze and stared at the man. The room became still. What Thomas said next made sense only to one other man in the room.
Three of hearts.
Three of, eh? Nash said. Thomas smiled at Marley, who looked with amazement at the first card facing him in his deck.
A coincidence, Marley cried. A sheer coincidence, that's all.
Well then, Thomas grinned. Perhaps you'd care to look at the next card under.
The King of Spades.
Nash and Nixon eyed their boss with interest as he turned the card. The widened eyes were enough to know that Thomas was right again.
Do it again, Nash enthused. Tell us the next one.
All right, one more, Thomas said. Nine of Diamonds.
Let him go, boys, Marley said. You can't be a warlock and a werewolf.
He stopped himself before he could add,
Can ye?
Now at the table was a tall, thin woman who caught the eye of Officer Nash, not because of her fine looks, but because of the way she dressed. On the way into the station, having heard some of why Chief Marley suspected the lady of being a werewolf, Nash had elbowed Nixon in the ribs and indicated with two round eyes the long white dress she wore. Now, Nash felt compelled to question the woman.
Why is it you're dressed all in white?
The lady, Gertrude by name, looked at Nash with a blank expression. She spoke in a toneless voice and quietly, almost at a whisper.
I am to be wed.
Nash, clearly startled by this, took a step closer to Nixon.
Hear that, Nixon? Dressed in her wedding dress she is. Waiting for her lover.
Stop it, Nixon scowled.
All I'm saying is, I know what you're saying, and what you're saying's nothing but a load of codswallop. Now stay professional and question the lady.
All right, Nash said, and turned back to the lady. You told our chief that it's true you've been wandering to Graveyard at night.
Why is it you've been doing that?
Once again, with not a hint of tone in Gertrude's voice, she said,
Looking for my lover.
See? Nash whispered to Nixon. I'm telling you, she's a white lady at Turlingdale Graveyard. I saw her with my own eyes t'other night. Shut up,
Nixon returns in an equally quiet whisper.
I've told you 1,000 times there ain't no such thing as ghosts.
Woo, Gertrude said.
Nash and Nixon both jumped so quickly away from the table that they almost left their boots quivering at the bottom of it.
I told ye, Nash cried. She's the White Lady.
Woo,
Gertrude said, and the two officers paused in their tracks. Nixon eyed the women suspiciously.
Did you just say, who?
Gertrude looked plainly at the officer and nodded.
Yes, woo-hoo. I just remembered it's steak night at the eating house, though I'm not very hungry.
Psst! Nash nudged Nixon once more. You hear that? Not very hungry, she says.
Aye, Nixon returns. What of it?
Ghosts wouldn't be hungry, would they? Oh, give it a rest, will you? She says she's going to have a steak. Last time I checked, ghosts don't eat steaks. Maybe she did when she were alive, and she's just remembering what it was like. And now she's realising she's not hungry, because she's a bleeding ghost, Nixon. Oh, stop it. There's no such thing as ghosts. There is too. Is not. Now, will you get back to your... Miss Gertrude, what is it you're doing there?
The officers turned their attention back to the suspect, who now had her hand in front of her face and gazed at it as though it were something completely alien.
Gertrude, Nixon repeated.
Keeping her eyes fixed on her hand, she spoke.
Nothing. It's just my hand. Does it look awfully pale to either of you?
The two men stood and huddled together like penguins now.
It does look pale, don't it?
Nash whispered.
Aye, Nixon replied, voice shaking. But no more than me own hand. Got pale skin, that's all. Hers is much paler,
Nash argued.
Put your hand next to hers and we'll see. What?
Nixon cried, voice still trembling.
Go on, Nash implored, unless you're scared she is a ghost, of course.
This seemed to have done it. Nixon cleared his throat and took a few confident strides towards Gertrude. Asking if he might place his hands next to hers for an official police investigation, the lady agreed and Officer Nixon rolled up the sleeve of his right arm. When placed side by side, Gertrude's hand was indeed slightly paler than Nixon's, but not by much.
See, Nixon smiled at his partner, what did I tell you? There's no such thing as ghosts.
Here, the door to the interview room swung open, and Chief Marley entered carrying the giant book of folk with unusual carrots and sticks on their arm.
Any luck, lads? The chief asked.
No, chief, Nixon replied. I'm not sure she's a werewolf, but she's strange-like. Might be she's something else.
Well, Marley said, you can always check the book. Here, catch.
Marley tossed the book in the officer's direction, but he fumbled it, and instead it sailed straight towards Gertrude.
Miss! Nash cried. Watch it!
Gertrude did not flinch as the book flew towards her face, sailed straight through her head, and landed on the floor at a stunned Nixon's feet. Nash, without waiting for any further proof, exited the room, dashed out of the police station, and could be heard shouting,
The White Lady!
As he sprinted towards the local tavern.
You've got to be a werewolf, Marley said to the final suspect. Because if you ain't, I'll be sent packing to West Yarlington to find a new job as a bard or a story spinner.
William, the last man to be interviewed by an exhausted police force, remained as stiff and rigid as a frozen tree in winter as he listened to the chief and then replied.
Well, mayhap you can tell me why you think I'm a bleeding werewolf in the first place.
Oh, that's easy, Officer Nash said, nerves now settled a little after a quick drink or two at the tavern. It's your voice.
Me voice?
William said.
What about me voice?
Remember that man that took to fighting against all the folk in town that were unusual, Nash said.
Aye,
William said.
The fool that used to dress in a long black robe and wear that mask at the rat.
Aye, Nash agreed enthusiastically. The costume were supposed to make him look a bit more like a rat. He looked pretty good, too.
I thought the tale was a bit much,
Nixon yawned.
Well, what of him?
William asked.
You remember he didn't want no one knowing who he really was, Nash continued. That's why he masked his face and such. Well, he used to speak funny too, all gruff-like.
to mask his real voice. That's what your voice sounds like.
You think my voice sounds like Ratman's?
Ratman, Nixon cried. Aye, that's what the Erlingdale Times called him. No, no, Nash interjected. I'm not saying you sound like that vigilante. I'm saying your deep, gruff voice sounds exactly what I thought a werewolf would sound like.
I'm not a werewolf,
William said.
Aye, aye, Nash returned. We've been hearing that a lot. But the thing is, how would we know you're not a werewolf?
Well,
William started.
I've been listening to some of your interviews. Walls are thin in this station, you see. You need to get them fixed, Chief.
Aye, Marley admitted. No budget for it. At least that's what the mayor says. Anyway, what were you saying, William?
I heard you say you can't be a werewolf and this. You can't be a werewolf and that. Written in your book, I think it is. Well, I'm the same. I can't be a werewolf and something else, can I?
No, I suppose not, Marley said. But you'll have to convince us you're something else. What are you?
A serial killer,
William said flatly. Officer Nixon sprang from where he was sitting and unbuckled a pair of handcuffs from his belt.
Right, give me your hands. I'll be off to the cells with you.
Wait, wait, wait,
William cried.
Don't you want to hear my story first?
Marley waved a hand at Officer Nixon, indicating he should take a seat.
Let's hear the man out, Nixon. Nash, be sure to take notes.
Nash nodded and sat with a quill, ready and eager to hear William's story. William took a deep breath and began.
You remember a few months ago, you were looking for the man who caught up that woman and was found stuffed into the well. Only discovered she was there because old Farmer Nichols took a big swig of water from the pail, only to find his drink was redder than usual, and it was watching him through the eye that used to belong to Bridget Hamilton. A big manhunt was called, but you never did find a culprit. Well, here I am.
You horrid man, ye! Officer Nash shouted. You dastardly scoundrel! Officer Nixon shouted.
Chief Marley made no response. He was busy flicking through the giant book once more.
Ah, but there's more, lads,
William said.
A few weeks later, I killed me next victim. Strangled him with a rope, I did, and left him out in a field for the vultures. They feasted well that day, as you boys only ever found the bones.
I remember, Nash said. Been trying to work out who the bones belonged to all this time. Aye, Nixon said. Got the bones in a filing cabinet for evidence, so we do. They've been banging at the door the past few nights. Not sure I want to find out what they want.
So you've murdered at least two people, Chief Marley interrupted, his nose still half buried in the large hardback.
Aye. About 20, I'd say.
20! Officer Nixon gasped. Right, Chief. We've got to take him in. I'll get a cell ready.
No, Marley said with a hint of frustration in his voice.
You won't, Nixon. You can't.
What? Nixon cried.
But Chief, he's a serial killer.
Which, Marley started, according to this book, makes him a person with special characteristics. It's listed under S, right next to Sea Monster.
And you boys have already agreed I can't be a werewolf if I'm something else, so I'll be on my way, boys.
With that, William stood and made for the door. Not one of the police officers attempted to stop him. As he reached the door, he turned and grinned at the men.
Oh, and if you happen to hear some screaming coming from 6 feet under in the graveyard, you might want to check it out. You might just save someone. But whoever put the live body in the ground might be a bit upset.
Chief Marley sat back in his chair after signing the last of the documents on his desk. He took a deep breath. It was done. 5 suspects. 5 folk cleared. 5 folk people would now never suspect of being a werewolf. Perfect. It had all been quite spectacularly elaborate, and it might not have needed to be that way if it weren't for that damn Officer Nixon. It was he, alongside the rest of Erlingdale, that Marley had had to convince. The mirror angled in such a way that Nixon couldn't see Eliza's reflection. How they'd practiced it. Marley's own voice echoed through his mind when he thought about it.
No, no, don't hold it facing that way. Nixon's sure to see your reflection and he'll never think you're a vampire.
It was easy enough to believe Henry was a zombie. Goodness knows, if Nash hadn't blurted it out quickly enough, Henry might have had to have actually taken a proper bite out of Nixon's arm to prove it, but it hadn't come to that. Thomas's memory served him well when it came to him seeing the cards that Marley held in his hands. It was the book through the heads trick that had proved the most difficult of illusions. Nash had done his best to convince the fool that ghosts really existed, but Nixon had remained sceptical. Once the trick had been done successfully, Officer Nash had asked Marley how in the wide world he'd pulled it off.
"Ach, 'twas mirrors is all," was Marley's reply.
And William? Well, no special trickery was involved with William, being that he was a serial killer and a werewolf. But according to the book, this was impossible. And most of the fools of this town would believe it to be so. Eliza, Henry, Thomas, Gertrude, William, Chief Marley, and even Officer Nash. Werewolves all. But the town would surely think otherwise. All it would take would be another little bribe to the editor of the Erlingdale Times to make sure of it. They met at the graveyard in the dead of night, the seven of them. Tonight, the moon was one stage away from full. There had been no transformations. Instead, they gathered to congratulate each other on the fact that they had successfully convinced the entire town that there were no werewolves left in Erlingdale.
"One town, many peoples," Henry scoffed. "The only people I care about are werepeople."
"Aye," cried the other six. "Now we've got a chance," Thomas enthused. "Aye," agreed Eliza. "A chance to slowly begin the transformation of all folk in town."
"Just think," Gertrude said. "A whole town of werefolk."
"A dream come true it'll be."
"Shh,"
the others hissed.
"Keep your voice down, William," Marley demanded. "We don't want Nixon to realise we're all here before he gets here."
"But I am keeping me voice."
"Shh."
"What? I'm speaking as quiet as I..."
"Shh."
"Oh, you lot are nothing but a bunch of..."
"William?"
Officer Nixon was perplexed to find the ghastly gathering as he rounded the corner to the spots in the graveyards he'd been instructed to meet Marley in.
"Blast it," Marley spat. "We were going to reveal our dastardly plan much more dramatically than this, but here we are."
Nixon looked at his chief with confusion.
"What's going on?"
But before anyone could answer, Officer Nash raised a musket and fired. The bullet hit Nixon in the chest and he thumped down to the ground, clutching at the place where he was shot. Gathering around him, the gang looked down and grinned as they saw the colour fade from his face.
"Wait," Officer Nash said. "Did it really have to be another silver bullet?"
"No," Marley answered.
"But a silver bullet will kill any man dead. Werewolf or no."
Thank you for listening to the Finding North podcast. Please follow the podcast on your preferred platform and head over to chrisamorris.com for all the latest. Next week's story is a drama called Snow.